Hello, and welcome to Living Vertical Radio, where we change the narrative of media by introducing you to creative and innovative individuals that inspire you with their unique stories. Our host is Cystine Duckworth, and you can call in or Skype into this program by calling 1-646-668-2928 #1. Please make sure your surrounding area is quiet because this is a live program. One Sure Sign Mobile Notary of Frisco, Texas provides professional notary service across the Dallas metro area. Our notary professionals are ready to help you with loan closings, power of attorney, fingerprinting, and other notary services. We meet you at your location of choice, your home, office, hospital, or local coffee shop, convenient to your schedule. Reliable, professional, and affordable. One Sure Sign is happy to support Living Vertical Radio here in Texas. Mention you heard this ad on Living Vertical for $5 off any notary service.
And good morning, everybody. I hope everybody's having a great day. So today, we are talking about embracing your crankiness. We'll be talking to attorney-turned-author Stephen Joseph. His Crankosaurus method helps people embrace and release their inner crankiness rather than bury it. A blend of humor, common sense, and expertise gives people a fresh take on this topic. Now, Stephen Joseph is a first-generation American son of a Holocaust survivor, attorney, negotiator, speaker, author, 5-time Boston Marathon, and 16-time New York City Marathon runner, a humorist who has spent 28 years as a partner with therapists, a lifetime of shuckling and countless synagogues, but is a person who's still smart enough to know that he hasn't figured it out yet. Well, except for crankiness. Today, we're talking to him about his forthcoming book, The Crankosaurus Method, Crankiness. So I think there's a lot of us that could use that book right about now, right? So I hope you enjoy our program today with author Stephen Joseph. We're going to have him on the program today talking about his book and talking about some of the, he has this fantastic blog, so we want to, you know, try to get a lot in this short time we have. So, everyone, welcome author Stephen Joseph. Hi, Stephen, how are you?
Hi, how are you doing? Good morning, good afternoon. Hi. It's afternoon for me. It might be morning for you, so doing great.
Still morning. Still morning in Arizona. Where are you located?
I am in Hoboken, New Jersey, right on the river, and I'm staring at the New York City skyline right now.
On
a lovely, sunny Saturday afternoon.
I know, that's good. We've been having some beautiful days in Arizona, and that's just a teaser to the hot days that are coming. It's been great. It's been great. And as we all start to come out of the pandemic a little bit or get vaccinated, it just makes the days even better.
Absolutely.
So, Stephen, you're going to talk to us about embracing our crankiness today, and I had a lot of fun going through your blog. I have to admit, you got some crankiness too, even though we hate to admit that. So talk to us about your growing years and, you know, how did your growing up years influence you to be a writer?
Well, my growing up years was just always being pushed to write. That was something. My parents, they were not educated, but they wanted their kids to be educated. So certainly writing was a big thing. We had to read the New York Times, the news section before anything else. My father, and neither of my parents went past sixth grade education, but my father, actually I was, I think about it and from looking back on this, that my family growing up in the Bronx, my father was probably the only one who bought the New York Times. And he made us read it. He made us read it cover to cover, like every morning. It was required reading. And if we went to the sports section, my father would rip it out of my hand. So that was growing up.
Okay. All right. I always find it really interesting how that's one of the things that many individuals that I've interviewed and read about, that one of the things that's consistent when it comes to growing up and having parents that didn't really that didn't read or didn't know how to read at all, was that they made the kids read. And that's really interesting. They made you read the paper and just made you read. And so how did being an attorney influence any part of your writing?
Well, being an attorney, it actually influences a lot of my writing, because what I do is I do negotiation for a living, actually for an insurance company, and I also teach litigation. I chair the Dispute Resolution Committee with the American Bar Association years back. I've written on negotiation, and that kind of influences me in terms of, let's just writing about things. I had a mentor years ago who asked me to be on a panel, and I had to write two chapters for a textbook on accountant's liability practice, and it was very intimidating. I never wrote anything before like that, and he told me, he said, if you ever want to be an expert about anything, write about it. You have to write about it. And that actually was a big thing for me. And I started writing about negotiation. I started writing if a certain case came up that triggered like a story or some teaching, I would write about it. And I so wrote many articles, legal articles on things that I was involved in. So, and that started it all. Just saying, if you want to be an expert, just write about it. And he was right.
Okay. So tell me, what is the difference between crankiness and anger?
Crankiness, well, it's part of, it could be part of anger. It could be a subset of crankiness. That might be something you have. That's why you're angry. But I think the thing about crankiness is that it could be brought on by so many different things. And I even talk in my book, we always say, talk about how you feel, how you feel. And I could be very good talking about how I feel. Like, today I feel angry. Tomorrow I feel angry. Yesterday I was angry. And you might think Steve is very good about talking about his feelings, but he is an angry guy. What I try to do is I call it, I don't want to call it crankiness. It's called, I have a crankosaurus. I have this thing, and I call it the common crankosaurus, because the thing about it, they call it the common cold. You might have, it's a common cold because you might have one or two in an entire year, but a common crankosaurus, you could have two or three a day. So, so just anything, your sugar level's low, you're hungry, the train is late, somebody is calling you that, or you have some email that you have to respond to. There's so many different things in a day that could just trigger a feeling of crankiness. And you might not feel angry. This is life, you know. Hey, you know, there's traffic, you know. My baby's crying. Babies cry. You know, something to do, you know, you're going to feel cranky, but not necessarily angry. This is a big difference.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, you talk about embracing your crankiness. Why embrace your crankiness? Why not just cure it?
Well, the thing about it is that we are all cranky, and I talk about it's a grown-up guide to effective crankiness. Since we're all going to be cranky, we might as well be effective at it. And just how to let you know how this all started, I wasn't planning on writing this book. My previous book was actually a kid's book, The Last Surviving Dinosaur, The Tyrannocrankosaurus. And first of all, saurus is the Yiddish word for problems. Like in my house, it was like, oh, you think you have saurus? If I had your saurus, I'd be doing cartwheels. No one could outdo my saurus. You know, so it was like this competitive thing, who has the best saurus? So I was actually with in Rome at an Airbnb with my wife, and it was August, and the electricity went out, and she was coloring her hair, and she got black hair dye in her eye, and it was 95 degrees with no electricity, and she was having this cranky moment. And it just came out of my mouth that she was like a Tyrannocrankosaurus. And I said, that's probably how all the other dinosaurs died. There's one small, tiny dinosaur who kept cranking out her saurus till all the other dinosaurs couldn't take it anymore, and they all dropped dead. So that kind of got a laugh out of her. But after that, what happened is that became a story, but also just even in our relationship, the crankosaurus became a thing. So if I could feel like I have a crankosaurus in me, there's this thing, I don't have to just like whether it's not about her, it's not about, you know, it's just like if I'm like I'm feeling that thing, I have a crankosaurus in me. It's almost like you have something in your head that instead of going straight to your mouth and maybe hurting somebody, deposited it like maybe in my chest somewhere. It's just like it's the crankosaurus. So it's almost like it's like a box. It's the brakes on. It's not like again. It's not like trying to get rid of it. It's just noticing it. That's what it's all about. Okay. It's just noticing the crankiness in you and being more effective. How do I take it that I just say I have this and not necessarily hurt somebody?
So how do you acknowledge it, and how do you articulate what's bothering you? I know you have to be able to articulate it, acknowledge it, then you can learn how to release it. So how can they acknowledge it? How can people acknowledge that you're just cranky? Because I know sometimes if I'm cranky, I don't feel like if someone says, well, what's wrong? It's like I don't really feel like talking to you. I mean, I'm just saying. So how do you acknowledge it, at least to yourself?
Well, I might have fun with it. Like we might have a cranky time where we get to almost like improvisational theater where I get to perform my crankiness and make it silly. You know, so but it's all true that like tell me about your day. Tell me about your cranky day. You know, it's like, okay, let me just like add off all the things. And it becomes funny. It becomes funny. If you had to go through the list of things that happened during your day that kind of pissed you off, you know, so, but you get to express it, you get to release it. And, as saying like, yeah, it happens. You get to release it. It's just there. And people hear you. You get the power of being heard. You know, it's something about being heard. And I talk about that in negotiation, giving people the experience of being heard. You know, makes it feel better. And sometimes you just need a quiet place. You need to go in a quiet room and just like air your brain out. You feel fried. You don't want to be performing. Mm-hmm. telling about your lousy day to everybody. You just want a little quiet. But everybody has that. You know, so and even with relationships, we have our kryptonite. Like I have one chapter in my book is Crankosaurus Kryptonite. And just because you have a problem with kryptonite, doesn't mean like, oh, yeah, well, you're like Superman, you know, let me find another superhero. You know, we all have our kryptonite. So just respect that and embrace it. And it doesn't become bad. I always wonder why Superman never went to the doctor and say, look, last episode I had this kryptonite issue. And now all these villains are making kryptonite. Well, I need something, steroids, some Tylenol. Give me something to help me with this kryptonite problem. He just goes out and fights crime the next episode. He doesn't worry about it. So, but we understand that. And Lois Lane and Jimmy Olsen doesn't dump Superman just because of a little kryptonite. You know, they're loyal. Right. They're just going to keep being a Superman fan.
I remember my husband used to have me cracking up because in the day we used to work very close together. And so he would say, whenever something would happen on the job or with a client or something, he says, okay, you got 2 minutes to bitch about it. You could just throw out anything you wanted to say in 2 minutes. And then he would go, okay, time.
That's it.
Yeah, and we would just keep working, and it used to be funny. I remember it now. He passed away, but I remember it sometimes when I'm working. I remember, okay, what would Norman say? And he said, "You got 2 minutes to bitch about it, and then throw it away." So yeah, that was really hilarious. It was the most hilarious thing I learned. So how can this help in making a stronger bond between partners? Because you've had some experience with therapists as partners, right?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. How it makes us stronger is that, you know, we're accepting of each other's, you know, the things that we have. We know the things that makes us cranky. You know, I have a chapter in my book, Crankosaurus Pandemic. You know, we're all living together on top of each other. We get on each other's nerves, and the thing about it is to say I have a crankosaurus, it's not about the other person. It's not about, so the example I give is, let's say you're doing something that rubs under my skin a little bit. You know, it's just slightly annoying. You know, it's just, I dismiss it, it's fine. But the 10th time, because I just don't have the bandwidth, I can't handle it, I just lash out at you. And it's like, it came out of nowhere. I just like, all of a sudden, like, why do you blah, blah, blah? It's like, so all of a sudden, you're thinking, wait a second, like, this is something I do all the time. Why is he attacking me? And I'm thinking, like, I should get a medal because I didn't attack you the first 9 times. I attacked you only the 10th time, so I should be a hero here. And that's pretty much what's going through people's minds. But it's not about, by having a crankosaurus, it's not about you. It's just like, I have this thing that I'm feeling, and then I could decide once I know I diagnosed the crankosaurus, and then how do I treat it? Do I need to talk about it? Do I need to walk away? Do I need to just express I have this crankosaurus? I'm not safe around. Let me just walk away for a bit, or whatever it is. Then you know how to treat it, and because the other partner knows about the crankosaurus. Oh, he has the crankosaurus. It's not. And it's a common crankosaurus. The other person's not thinking, oh, my God, nobody has ever had a crankosaurus before. This is the first time in history. This is a rare disease. It's a common disease. I have in my blog, getting on your nerves, crankosaurus, getting on my nerves, crankosaurus. Right. And you know, and they talk about, like, you have a lot of nerve, or, oh, you have some nerve, or you have no nerve at all. Oh, he has no nerves. Right. That's his problem. But whatever it is, we all get on each other's nerves, and no nerves are even required to get on anybody's nerves. You could be nerveless and still get on people's nerves. So, so understanding that, it kind of helps to just embrace it and just even Just my last blog, I need to mention this because it's really a good point. Tough going, Crankosaurus. And they say when the going gets tough, the tough gets going. So I say, well, right. When the going gets tough, why do the tough never stick around? They always get going. and I have Timid Timmy, two brothers, Timid Timmy and Tommy Toughnuts. And Timid Timmy, like, he's asked to clean his room. He's cranky, but he does it. He has to study for the exams. He's cranky about it, but he does it. And he has to practice piano, and he's cranky, but he does it. Tommy Toughnuts, he says when the tough gets going, the tough gets going, he's out of there. It's being nuts to stick around. He never sticks around. So later in life, Timmy becomes his great surgeon, and he's known as one tough operator, of course. And then Tommy Toughnuts ends up being cranky because he's really kind of nuts, and he never really got good at anything. That's why, you know, it was good to embrace that crankiness growing up, because mm-hmm. you got a lot of skills by doing so. And of course, Tommy Toughnuts mm-hmm. never sticks around. He's not so tough anymore, just nuts. But of course, he's very cranky. So just things to learn, and positive things even to get out of our own crankiness.
Okay. All right. There was one point you mentioned when you were talking just now, and I was laughing because when there would be times I could come home and my husband would have a look on his face like he's cranky and he's ready to start an argument. And I used to just turn around and walk out the door. And I would just go for a walk. I was very non-confrontational. And I would do it all the time. And then one day he said, "I hate it when you do that."
it was
really funny. I instead of maybe talking to him about why he was cranky or, you know, I would just turn and walk away. I'm like, "Look, I'm not dealing with this, you know, argument." And he just said, "I hate it when you do that." And I'm like, "Oh, okay, well, that's just making it worse."
What you should have done, you should have just put on your bartender hat and, "Sir, what can I get you?" You know, it's just, and, you know, the guy sitting at the bar, you know, like laying out all his Crankosaurus stories, you know, and you're just listening. And, you know, the bartender who listens to everybody's problems, you know, so that's what he could have done. And he would have been quite happy. "I get a drink and I get to complain. Wow, this is great."
Right. So during COVID, oh, my goodness, it just seems – it's kind of interesting because it seems like instead of that crankiness that everyone has, you think that now that we're, you know, getting vaccinated and, you know, and just starting to see some better things happening, but it still feels like the crankiness meter is still going up.
Yeah.
How are we dealing with this extra dose of crankiness? Because, you know, that's the part that I see, and I'm like, okay, oh, wait, you know, we're still getting, you know, we're still being cranky about this, and it doesn't seem to be going away yet.
We just have to keep acknowledging our crankiness, and in terms of treating the crankiness, diagnosing and treating the crankiness, the Crankosaurus. Really, if you go through my book, there's bits that comes out that really talks about the, mindfulness and empathy. And if you have the two mm-hmm. together, you're mindful.
Right.
You see what's there, and you could slow it down. So I used to go to the village Zendo, and the Roshi, the teacher, she would always talk about utilizing skillful means. And I always loved that term, utilizing skillful means. So, and that really is having a sense of mindfulness. So,
okay.
Again, you know, it's just when something is your brain, it just doesn't, come out of your mouth. I have in my book a can of worms, Crankosaurus, and I make this this story, but I talk about you know, a can of bees. Like, I don't know what's the big deal about a can of worms. A worm crawls out, you put it back in the can, no big deal. Can of bees,
right.
Now, like, you open up a can of bees, it could, like, you could bite everybody around you. And sometimes it feels like there's a can of bees in your head and you just want to open it up your head and bite everybody, whoever's close to you. And I even talk about, how about taking a can and like holding it for a bit and making believe all those bees turned into worms. And then I end the chapter saying, you know what, opening up a can of worms is not that bad after all. So, it's a mindfulness to have that, you know, awareness about you that how your crankiness could be hurtful or your crankiness could be not helpful. And then the empathy when no one's there to listen to your crankiness, sometimes you just have to be heard, and that's the empathy part. And you put those two together, and you still get to be cranky, and you get power. You feel empowered, not powerless. So that's the thing about embracing your crankiness, but thinking about it in a different way, it becomes this power that you have. And you can grow with your partner, you can grow with your friends, and everybody could be happy and cranky.
So when we talk about pent-up emotions, frustrations, misunderstandings, how much can be attributed to just someone starting out being cranky and it just keeps blowing up and blowing up? So, you know, you saying being a negotiator as an attorney, how many things or what's the percentage would you say of things that probably could have been a non-issue if we just kind of understood where it came from? It could have just started something very small and just spiraled out of control.
Well, that happens in litigation a lot where, and it's terrible. Like how attorneys work sometimes, you know, you have emails, people write each other emails and then they have to posture in their emails, or letters, you know, just, you know, pounding their chest. There's a lot of chest pounding. There's, and there's the lack of communication. So one of the things in negotiation is just listening. I talk about, you know, a Crankosaurus. I talk about negotiation, you know, with attorneys. We have to put out fire with fire. You know, and I said, like, oh, this is interesting. I went to the fire station. I saw this fire person. I asked this person how they put out, like, what high-impact explosives they use to put out the fire. Do they use premium gasoline or could you use just regular unleaded? And the fire person said to me, no, we actually use water. Could you believe it? They use water to put out fire. And and so I always say, think about, like, you know, what's the water? You know, so in negotiation, I talk, water is clarity. It provides clarity. You know, you can't put out a Crankosaurus fire with a Crankosaurus fire. You just get a bigger fire. So so that's something I talk about. You know, people who are not attorneys, they end up like to litigate their positions. And it's not about litigating. It's about listening. I had a seminar. I gave a seminar in negotiation where the exercise was that somebody's mad at you for whatever you did, and you have to make that person not mad at you. But you could only use defenses, legal defenses you would use in your practice. These are defense lawyers. So of course, just the basic example, you're mad at me, I'm the one who should be mad at you. That's a counterclaim, you know. So, but that's not going to make the other person like, you know what, you're right. You're the one who should be mad at me. I'm sorry I'm so mad at you. I'm not mad at you anymore. It doesn't happen that way. That person is going to be more mad because how dare you think you should be mad at me? I'm now twice as mad at you than before. Whatever excuses, like a contributory negligence or there's all different kinds of, we didn't have a contract, you know, just different sort of things. I play with that. And it, again, it doesn't solve the problem of somebody being mad. So I bring that out, that, you know, to understand that, again, you take that mindfulness empathy combination and people kind of open up. And then when you communicate in a positive way, it's a different way of communicating. It's not about getting rid of it. It really is turning the bees into worms. Worms are easy to deal with. You know, you just take it out. Here's the worm, put it back in the can. That's it.
Well, now, you do a lot of writing as far as your blog as well. So what challenges did you face writing? What's probably the most challenging when you're writing, period?
The most challenging, so how I write, I'm a runner. You know, you mentioned that I do marathons,
right.
And I'm training. I am running the New York City Marathon this year, which I'm excited about. But I go out for my long runs every morning, and the stories start writing in my head while I go running. When I come back, I just write it down, and then it's actually quite fun when I could create characters and they start talking to each other and I just watch them talk. I don't do anything. I just watch them talk. So it's a lot of fun. And whenever I write something, I go, that's it. There's nothing else that's going to be in there. And sure enough, something else comes.
Right.
It's probably in between the two parts that's really tough because you still want to live in the last story you wrote. You know, just had so much fun with that last story. So, like, I have Crankosaurus Cinderella, and I had so much fun with the characters in that story.
Right.
And then it's really hard to let go. It's just, okay, I have to walk away from that and then come up with, then something else pops up and it's very exciting when something else does, but it's that in between spot and what happens in between is that I start thinking about my day job, my work, which is not as much fun as my writing. So that's probably the toughest thing.
Okay. So, and now as a writer, how supportive is your family to you as a writer? Because I know that writers can be very intense at times. I know that, you know, when I'm writing sometimes, you know, my kids are talking in one ear and I'm trying to hear my writing in the other ear. Sometimes it's really hard. I'm always like, okay, give me like about 5 minutes to switch off that part. How supportive is your family to you?
My daughter is all grown. She's 26 and she lives away from me. But she's supportive. And my wife, she is my muse for a lot of this. So she's very supportive and quite
great.
Helpful and makes suggestions. So that's been good.
All of us have to market ourselves and our, you know, our books. So what techniques have been effective for you in marketing your book?
Techniques. What I'm trying to do is like branding and keep writing stuff, putting more product out there, you know, having the blog, I think the blog has so much material. So if you read the book and just having that out there, my next book is actually a kid's book, Snoodles, Cadoodles, Poodles, and lots of noodles. So it also has this like cranky theme, and it's a story of the invention of the Snoodlemobile, which runs on noodles and could actually make a really good bowl of macaroni and cheese, and it replaced the Krautmobile, which just ran on sauerkraut. So, and sauerkraut was very smelly, and people even had the mask, so it almost has like a pandemic feel to it. Like, yeah, there's a picture at the botanical gardens with kids wearing masks. And, of course, once the Snoodle came out, everybody loved the Snoodle. And then there was the Noodle Art Museum. It's a whole story. But anyway, so it's just, continuing to write is the most important thing, because then people probably start taking you more seriously. And continue to write on the blog, which becomes probably like a volume two of my grown-up guide to crankiness. The book is out. It's on Amazon. There's an audio book on Audible, which is fabulous. This great actor, Nick Santisier, did it. Really great job. So just keep doing it. Keep plugging away. And then people start saying, that's the only thing I could do.
Wow, that's great that you have actually have something on Audible as well. I went through a couple of blogs, and it was, you know, and I was like, oh my goodness, you're, you know, the creativeness in the blogs and the writing. So I'm like, okay, this is great. A couple of them was just kind of all of them were hilarious. My favorite one was Sitting in Traffic. usually, you know, in my first life, I used to train drivers. And so it was just hilarious because when I'm riding with my daughters, you know, I'm watching the different types of, between both of them, what their different crankiness styles is. So it gets to be kind of hilarious. When I'm watching them, and so I'm always kind of like, when I make a suggestion, there I get comments like this, you know, Mom, we can just open the door and throw you out. They're like, oh, you know, we've heard this before, Mom. You know what? We're just choosing to be this way right now and having a little bit of road rage. So, I'm gonna send one of these books to my daughter.
Well, in the book, there is a chapter called Driver's Ed Crankosaurus. So they should appreciate that. But, I could get into it, but someone will have to read the book.
Right. Well, I will say, now, one of my things of doing when I kind of feel like, you know, saying when I'm feeling cranky, and especially because I work at home, been working at home for a long time, and our company is getting pretty big. And so a lot of times, I mean, the perfect thing for me is when I'm feeling cranky, whether it's clients or whether it's, you know, I just don't want to do this work right now. I go and I start a new recipe and cook. So that's my way of dealing with it. I'll go cook.
And that is something I do. There's Crankosaurus cooking class. I talk exactly on my blog. There's Crankosaurus cooking class. And, yes, I think cooking is a great way to release all that Crankosaurus. That's the perfect thing, yes. Absolutely.
Yeah, it is. So it's really – this is really a great time in coming into this. So – what would you share as far as you as a writer? What would you share with new writers who are coming into, you know, I want to write a book, or any part of the writing process? What would you share with them?
Well, what I would share is that, you know, always write, and the fun part is it should be after whatever you wrote to make it more fun. So it's a living piece. Once you write a story, don't let it just sit there. Go back and still try to have some play with it, because some of the best things come after it, the editing. It's like scaffolding, building a building, and you're adding a different piece and a different piece and a different piece. And don't be afraid to tell the story. Sometimes, like when I first was writing, I would kind of keep things short. And I learned how to expand it all, give it more color, give it more feeling. So that's what I would recommend to writers. Just keep playing with it.
Okay. And Stephen, again, what is your website? What is your address for your website for our audience to hear?
It's www.StephenJosephAuthor.com. Stephen with a V, Stephen Joseph, two first names, author.com.
Great. And I want to ask you, so how did you get into running the marathon?
How do I get into running the marathon? That's something I'm very proud of. It's also in my book. I actually lost 85 pounds in about 5.5 months.
Wow.
So I just decided to give up pastrami, chopped liver, triple decker sandwiches, and fried foods. I said no matter how tired I was going to go to the gym and work out. And the first thing I was put on by the trainer, he put me on a life cycle, level one, 3 minutes, and I was dying after 3 minutes. 2 years later, I ran a couple marathons. I went from 240 to 155, and then now I'm in like 170s, but a little older. But then when I turned 40, I decided to run the New York City Marathon for my 40th birthday, and I did it like 4 hours and 21 minutes. I was a wreck. Afterwards, my body was completely broken down, but for some reason I thought I'd keep going at it. When I turned 50, I ran New York City Marathon in 3 hours and 17 minutes. That was my personal record at age 50. This year I turned 60. My goal is to try to get back into Boston. So I think I need around 350 for that. But every marathon has its own story, and I love doing it. People
amazing.
Ask me for what
That's
my goal
great.
Is, and it's uh-huh. really to enjoy it. Yeah, I really do enjoy that.
Wow, that's actually very good. Congratulations. And running that, too. What's the difference
Thank
between
you.
The Boston Marathon and the New York City Marathon?
They're both point to point, so they're both
okay.
very in that way they're similar, where you have to get to the launching site. Like I have to get to Staten Island like a few hours before, and it's like a whole big thing. And then Boston, you get on a bus and it takes you out to where I forget the town where it starts in. So it's the same where you're sitting around till, you know, you have like this energy that you want to release. So they are very similar. Boston, they have the best fans. I do think Boston, the whole community, every community is out there giving water, giving ice pops, sometimes beer when you get by Boston College. It's a little bit different, but it's very much the same. Just a great experience. And Boston is really nice when you finish going down like just the main drag, and the whole crowd is there. New York City is you're going inside the park. It's a little different, but they're both very similar in how they're both run.
Wow, that's pretty good. That's really awesome. thank you for sharing that with us. So any last words for our audience about crankiness and about embracing that before we go?
So, yes, I do have last words. One chapter is important to me that really kind of like it was a teaching for me is Drive Me Crazy, Crankosaurus. And the two sentences that happen in everybody's head at some time in their life many, many times, it drives me crazy when, in the next sentence, I cannot understand how. You know, usually it drives me crazy when somebody did something. I cannot understand how that person did. And so I tell a story where, like, it's one thing happening, but different people from different – everybody goes – has that same reaction. And it just teaches me, well, yeah, I do get driven crazy, but maybe I could slow it down. And that's what I hope people get to do after reading my book.
That's really good, Stephen. Thank you for being on our program today. We really appreciate you. And I'm sure all of us listening have learned some tidbits, and hopefully all you out there will go get Stephen Joseph's book. And we will be putting the link out for you, and we will also put in Vertical Magazine where to get the book, and we will have Stephen Joseph's website as well, so you can go in there and read those amazing blogs. Stephen, thank you so much again for being on A Taste of Ink with me, Celeste.
Thank you for having me.
And yeah, I wish you all the best, and definitely I'm looking forward to seeing what you're gonna write next. And what grade level of children are you writing for?
I would say like ages 4 to 9, that would be probably the age group. Yeah.
Okay, perfect. Well, thank you again, Joseph, and I appreciate you and look forward to your next endeavor.
Thank you. Thank you again for having me.
I'd like to thank our team Vertical for helping us put this program together, and we hope you have a great day.
Thank you to our faithful listeners. This has been Living Vertical Radio, and you have been listening to our host, C. Steen Duckworth. Stay tuned to our next program. Interested in getting your business in front of a worldwide audience? Contact info@verticalmediagroup.com. That's info@verticalmediagroup.com for details. And now, a word from our sponsors.
Books that make you laugh. Books that make you scream. Books that make you hope. And books that make you dream. What's on your bookshelf? Discover the books that make you who you are on booksthatmakeyou.com. Read book reviews. Meet the authors who pour their souls into the books you love. And enter to win bookish prizes. If you're a bibliophile, then Books That Make You is your new best friend. Visit booksthatmakeyou.com or find us on Insta and Facebook.
We're done. Mm-hmm.